Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Mary Mitchell, and I'm the attorney for Roy Luza. Appellant Roy Luza is 62 years old. Mr. Luza completed 6 years of schooling. Mr. Luza has past relevant work as a maintenance, repair, and chauffeur. He last worked June 3, 2003. Mr. Luza was treated for psychiatric disorders by Dr. Tahir Bhatti. Dr. Bhatti submitted treatment notes in support of two opinions of Mr. Luza's mental limitations, submitted on September 15, 2005 and October 20, 2005.
I ask you a question. Dr. Bhatti, that was his treating psychiatrist, did he ever state explicitly in any of his reports that his patient was unable to work?
No, he didn't, Your Honor. He did state, she did state that the symptoms from his numerous...
But he never went on and said a person with these symptoms cannot work.
No, he never stated that. That's a decision reserved to the commissioner. She never did say that.
When you say reserved, do you mean the doctor's not allowed to say that? Or
doctor's not allowed to say that a claimant is unable to work and disabled.
But Dr. Bhatti didn't really express any limitations. There's just some general language about mental limitations. Is that right?
In her September 15, 2005 letter, she did, it was rather general. She did state that because of this list of symptoms, it would encumber or impair his ability to work. Now, in her October 20th opinion, she stated specifically that he had marked limitations in several areas.
Okay. And then the ALJ rejected that based on inconsistencies with Dr. Bhatti's progress notes. So what was wrong with that basis for rejecting the letter or the work evaluation?
The basis for rejecting a treating physician's opinion of a claimant's mental or physical limitations are specific and legitimate. And my argument is that Dr. Bhatti's treatment records and progress notes are consistent with her opinions. They support them throughout the treating relationship, and also that the judge's complete rejection for Dr. Bhatti's two opinions was summed up in one single sentence stating that they were inconsistent. It cited a huge exhibit, Exhibit 19F, without specificity, and there's several entries in Exhibit 19F that clearly supports Dr. Bhatti's state of limitations in her October 20th opinion.
I'm not sure I understand exactly. Some people have a mental disease, and 20 milligrams of Lexapro will keep it under control so that they can work. Some people have a mental disease that Lexapro is the right medicine for, but even with 20 milligrams, they can't work, and the doctor doesn't want to give them more. And I can't figure out exactly what Dr. Bhatti is saying. Show me how to read these things. Got them right here. I think the ALJ read one of them where she said, September 15, he seems to be consistent with medical treatment. That's bad grammar, so it's hard to read. What's the opinion?
With psychiatric patients, it's very important for the treatment provider to establish that the claimant's compliant with treatment, coming to appointments, going to group therapy, et cetera, and or compliant with medication, that the claimant is following Dr.
Sure, but what is the opinion on just how sick Luza is?
Dr. Bhatti stated that Mr. Luza would have marked limitations in several areas that are outlined in the excerpt of record, pages 13 to 14.
Which page?
Pages 13 to 14. I'm sorry. That's of my brief. It's excerpt of record pages 57 to 62.
You're talking about the October 20th mental residual functional capacity report?
Yes, Your Honor. And that report is taken off of a Social Security form.
But then the ALJ finds that that's inconsistent with, I'm looking at one of these client progress notes, which indicates that mood improved, no longer depressed, almost no depression, I think was the exact language.
The almost no depression statement was in quotations.
Why does that make a difference?
It does because in treatment records from the psychiatrist or psychologist, they will put in quotations what the patient states during the examination to differentiate that from the treating physician's own opinions. And so when he puts, when she puts something like that in quotations, it means that's, she's taking that directly from the patient in that his impression is that he has almost no symptoms.
Are you trying to say that Luza told the doctor, I have almost no depression today?
Yes, Your Honor.
But the doctor wrote in the chart that he does? The quotes mean Luza told the doctor, almost no depression.
Yes.
And then what does the doctor say? Let's see, this is September 26th.
It says mood improved. So there's nothing in here that would be inconsistent with the statement that is in quotations, almost no depression.
If Dr. Boddy wanted to endorse that statement that there was almost no depression, she would not have put the quotations. And the fact that she put the quotations is...
That doesn't make sense to me. It's a symptom report by the patient. And the doctor can think the patient's right or wrong about, because mentally ill people often lack insight. So it's one thing the doctor considers in making a judgment. Now, where is the doctor's judgment exactly?
The almost no depression statement was made on September 26, 2005, but the doctor's opinion was September 15, 2005, and then again on October 20, 2005. It's more in depth on October 20, 2005. So the Dr. Boddy's October 20, 2005 opinion was after that examination.
So something that's troubling me, are you arguing basically that the record doesn't support the decision of either the administrative law judge or the district court? Is that what you're arguing?
I'm arguing that the ALJs did not follow the regulations, rulings, and case law that state that his reasons for rejecting a treating physician's opinion have to be specific and legitimate. And just stating a vague statement of they're inconsistent with treatment records and pointing to a huge exhibit without being more specific and more...
I raise this question because it seems to me we as an appellate court have to decide whether the people who decided the factual issues in this case had a basis for their decision in the record. That's what we have to decide, isn't it? We're not sitting here reviewing, deciding de novo whether he was or wasn't disabled. We're trying to determine whether the decision of the administrative law judge and the decision of the district court upholding that decision that he was not disabled, whether that is supported by the record. That's what we have to decide, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you say it's not supported by the record.
And that the ALJ did not follow case law that states that it should be specific and legitimate, his reasons for rejecting that treating physician.
Thank you. Oh, I guess you have a little time for rebuttal if you want to.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Anita Bayman Tracy, and I represent the appellee, the Commissioner of Social Security. Essentially here, the ALJ determined that although claimant did have some medical problems, when they were treated, he could perform some types of work. The ALJ, based upon the medical evidence, along with claimant's subjective complaints, determined that claimant's residual functional capacity, such that he could perform work, was that he could perform medium work.
Could you talk about page 57 of the excerpt? Here's what's on my mind.
Okay.
I know about the almost no depression. It's obviously quoting what the patient said. And most diseases go up and down some. So it's one thing in the record, but it's not the whole thing. What I'm interested in on 57 is that the doctor says episodes of deterioration, decompensation in work or work-like settings, marked. Ability to perform simple repetitive tasks, marked. Ability to perform detailed and varied tasks, marked. Ability to interact with the public 2 hours a day, supervisors less than 2 hours, coworkers less than 2 hours. Sustained capacity to perform work at a consistent pace, less than 2 hours. Also, I read the man's letters in the excerpts, and he sounded nuts. I don't quite see what there is in the record that's really inconsistent with the page 57 evaluation, and I can't imagine hiring anyone with that level of ability.
Well, the assessment that Dr. Boddy made here on page 57, the ALJ does give more weight to the treating physician's opinion. It's given deference. However, that deference is not absolute if it's not supported by objective medical evidence. And so, although you have page 57
with mental disease, depression, anxiety, you can't do a blood test the way you can for some diseases and say it's under 40 or it's over 160 or something like that. What are you looking for?
Right. Well, but you're looking at the progress notes to see how the claimant is reporting to his physician as to how he's doing, how the medication is improving or not improving his symptoms.
And I think your brief made a lot of that consistent letter, but I couldn't see that it proved anything. I couldn't even understand it.
Well, but the progress notes throughout keep saying that, you know, I have progress note from August 8th, 2005.
What page?
In the transcript.
Excerpts page, the Bates note.
Okay. Your Honor, I'm sorry, I only cited to the transcript records here, but in terms of the transcript on August 8th, Dr. Boddy says that the medications were helping with his dizziness, that his dizziness was unchanged. He reported that the medication was helping his panic attacks and his anxiety. He was sleeping well. Mood was improved. None of that is in quotation marks. You know, and so as the...
Oh, I understand what you mean. Yes, no question he said that, but helping doesn't mean the fellow's okay.
Right, and that's why the ALJ determined that that his residual functional capacity was quite conservative in the assessment that he gave him. The ALJ just didn't go out and say he can do any types of work.
The thing about helping is often doctors give him medicine, and if it doesn't help, then they reevaluate their diagnosis. If it does help, it suggests their diagnosis is right, but it doesn't mean that the condition is controlled. It may mean that it's controlled. It may mean that the person's fine, but it may not. What it means is it's the right medicine. It's working.
Right, but when you look at Dr. Boddy's limitations, these limitations are so extreme that they don't at all match up with the progress notes as they're going along. The progress notes should somehow reflect that he does have these marked limitations, that he is having these problems where he's having marked episodes of deterioration or decompensation. None of these progress notes show that. The progress notes consistently show that his medication that was provided was helping.
Well, sure, it's helping. I mean, earlier, I think it's earlier, yeah, August 19, he had major depression with psychotic features, although he did not have suicidal or homicidal ideation.
Well, but that
sounds like it was a lot worse then.
But, and I believe that you're referring to the examining psychiatrist physician's opinion, Dr. Solomon, who examined claimant on August 19, 2005, where his diagnosis was slightly different than even Dr. Boddy's.
And yeah,
even
it is. It's worse. Major depression with psychotic features.
But even Dr. Solomon says that the claimant can work. And he actually says I think it's excerpt of record page 104. Actually, it might be the supplemental excerpts of record at page 104.
Got it.
Even Dr. Solomon, who gave even a more extreme, I suppose, diagnosis, determined that from a psychiatric standpoint, the claimant is able to understand, carry out, and remember simple and complex instructions. The claimant is able to interact with coworkers, supervisors, and the general public. The claimant is able to withstand the stress and pressures associated with an 8-hour workday and day-to-day activities. But even despite that, the ALJ only gave moderate weight to Dr. Solomon's opinion because based upon claimant's subjective complaints, he determined that claimant did have some functional limitations as related to his mental impairments. That's why the ALJ determined that that the claimant should be limited to work in non-public settings and limited to contact with peers and supervisors. So even with this diagnosis, which is worse than Dr. Boddy's diagnosis, that doctor even thought that he could perform some types of work. So substantial evidence does support the ALJ's decision here, that the claimant, although with the, he does have some medical
problems. Do you know what this entry means? I don't know what it means. On Solomon 104, global assessment functioning, current about 65?
Yes. Essentially, when you have a global, the global assessment functioning is a mental examination that psychiatrists may perform on patients. And the number 65 shows that this person would have mild to moderate symptoms, not marked as Dr. Boddy assesses.
What would be more, 85 would be more serious?
In terms of worse, actually a lower score would have been, yes.
Oh, so it's like a grade in school, lower is worse.
Right. So substantial evidence does support the ALJ's decision here. And if there are no further questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors. First off, GAF is not an examination. It's an opinion of the examining psychiatrist who takes into account the entire examination, his diagnosis, and kind of distills it down to a numerical value. Also, Dr. Solomon's and Dr. Boddy's diagnoses were nearly identical. Dr. Solomon's findings reflected Mr. Luzzo's mental difficulties with the psychiatric exam itself.
Drs. Solomon and Dr. Boddy differ, however, in their opinion. And the ALJ had a duty to reject Dr. Boddy's opinion according to the standard. And the ALJ's reasons for rejection were not specific nor legitimate. The ALJ had no time constraints in issuing his decision. The ALJ had all the exhibits available. The ALJ had the hearing tape.
Thank you, counsel. Ruza v. Astru was submitted. We'll hear ECC Systems v. Astru.